Science has learned that all people possess mental powers which pass the boundaries of the natural.
Ghosts, Bigfoot, extraterrestrials,
Terra Hub Radio,
psychics, parapsychology, Loch Ness Monster,
Terra Hub Radio,
paranormal news, giveaways, open chat,
Terra Hub Radio,
classic rock, and paranormal talk, Thursdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, at parahub.org, bounceradio.net, and beastradio.com.
Shadow governments, strange rituals, new world
shadow
order,
governments, strange
buried treasure,
new
planetary mind control,
military
cover-up,
shadow governments, strange rituals, new world order, buried treasure, planetary mind control,
unidentified flying
objects,
presidential assassination,
unidentified objects, presidential assassination,
pyramids,
pyramids, fascists,
illuminated,
fascists,
apocalypse,
out there.
It's a strange world.
Visit outthereradio.net for more information.
Yeah. Interested in ghosts? UFOs? How about the occult? Are you psychic? Would you like to find out? Well, if you're intrigued by the world's curiosities and all that is paranormal, then Paralore.com is a place for you. Create your own profile, start a photo album, write a blog, or just hang out and watch countless hours worth of paranormal videos while chatting with other Paralore members. Who knows? You could win a prize or two if you're quick and brave enough. It's all here, and it's all free. Visit www.paralore.com and join today. Again, membership is free, and we know you won't be disappointed.
Paralore.com. Unlock your mind.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk.
I wish I'd have brought that fly in.
You really want to get that fly to bite my leg.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bite your leg randomly during the show one time, just to see, get you to cuss on the air. That'd be funny.
Oh, I don't think that would happen.
Here's what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Rain barrels that refill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Psychic horses. Mind-reading Cold War spies. For many, these phenomena are evidence of an unseen world just beyond the grasp of our five senses.
Mm-hmm.
For a group of scientists at Duke University, such mysteries demanded further investigation. From 1930 to 1980, under the leadership of Dr. J.B. Rhine, often considered the Einstein of the paranormal, the scientists at Duke Parapsychology Lab attempted to test the bizarre, the frightening, and the unexplainable against the rigors of science. In Unbelievable, Stacey Horn reveals the strange lost history of these first attempts to prove or disprove the existence of the paranormal, bringing to light a half century's worth of ghost stories, poltergeists, and paranormal activity. The Duke scientists were queried by the likes of Albert Einstein, Richard Nixon, Aldous Huxley, Carl Jung, and Helen Keller, the U.S. Army, and blue-chip corporations such as IBM and Zenith seized upon their findings.
Wow.
Ghostly Talk would like to welcome with great open arms Stacey Horn to the show. Welcome, Stacey.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's really cool to have you here. And I know at the beginning of the show, Doug actually read the title of the book. And it's one of them, it's a long title.
It's the longest title in history.
I think you might have that one. Yeah, I think you might have the longest title
my
in history.
My publisher was concerned that I picked Unbelievable. That was my contribution. And my publisher was concerned that no one would know what the book was about. They made sure they fit everything in that subtitle.
Yeah, okay, let's go through it again.
Yeah, go ahead.
Unbelievable. Investigations into ghosts, poltergeists, telepathy, and other unseen phenomena from the Duke Parapsychology Laboratory. Woo! But it does sum it up.
It really tells you what it's all about. So I mean, and obviously, we've kind of explained what this is all about. And I have to ask you, I mean, this is like a lot of digging, I imagine, you had to do. I mean, was there something that inspired you to do this, or was this something, I mean, how did you get started doing this? I guess that's what I'm asking you.
It came about because the book that I had written before this was called The Restless Sleep, and it was about the NYPD's cold case squad.
Okay.
And these are detectives that go back through old unsolved homicides to see if there are any that they can solve now. And I spent a couple of years with these detectives, and it was a lot of fun, and it was very interesting. I became immersed in the subject of unsolved murders and which go cold and why.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was, it just was ultimately very bleak. I mean, every case that I wrote about began with someone being murdered. And so I was, you know, often talking to the family members and friends of the victim,
mm-hmm.
and also the family members of the murderer. And, you know, life was hard ever since for them, too. So, you know, after a couple of years of murder, you know, I just wanted a break. And so I thought, you know, what's more fun than a ghost story? I just thought of it as this, you know, light bug. Yay, ghosts. Ooh, scary. And so I picked this ghost story that I had heard about when I was a kid, this ghost story that had taken place in Harlem in 1964. These group of school children were visiting this mansion in Harlem, the Morris Jamel Mansion. It was, it still is an historic landmark because George Washington briefly used it as his headquarters. And the kids saw the ghost of Eliza Jamel. So I thought, those kids, they're grown up now, they're probably around. I'll write about this story. I'll find those kids, and it'll be fun. So I wrote up a proposal, sent it around to a bunch of publishers. You know, that's how it works. You write it up, you try to sell the idea, and then publishers read it and then decide whether or not, they'll pay you to actually write the thing. And this one publisher had just finished reading The Restless Sleep, and she just had this alternative idea. She said, look, I grew up outside of Durham, and I know they have this parapsychology laboratory, but I don't know, what happened in there. Why don't you research that and write about these scientists and their cases the way you wrote about the detectives and their cases? And I just loved the idea. It was just a lot more interesting than, one ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, and signed a contract, and I went down to Duke. And again, I had just a completely different idea of the book that I was going to write. I thought I was basically going to be writing Ghostbusters. I'd be at the university, doing this research. So I get down there, I'm all excited. I was just never forget this. And there's 700 boxes of archives down there. And so I made this arrangement with the librarians that, they pull out 10 at a time that I'd look at. So I get down there all excited, open the first 10 boxes, and it's all math. And I don't have a background in math, and I find all the statistics and these scientific experiments that I simply can't understand. And I just remember just putting my head down, thinking, now what? I've traveled from New York to Durham. I've got a hotel room booked for months, a contract signed. I had to write a book, and this stuff is going over my head. What am I going to do? Exactly. I was so depressed. Why didn't I take that statistics course when I was in college? And also, I'm thinking statistics are boring.
To me, too, necessary.
See,
but
I differ because I was taught actually, and I'm not trying to drive us over into Alaska now with this conversation, but when I was studying mathematics and stuff like that, which I did, I had a hard time with mathematics as a young kid, but when I got older, I got really into it. And one thing I was told is that, we should teach more statistics because it actually gives you good information as opposed to just cranking out numbers. You get some meaning to the numbers through statistics. That's just my thing. But
I agree completely. Yeah. And after spending a few years trying to learn about statistics and science, I am completely turned around on the subject. I'm fascinated. And now I feel like, I'm impaired in life not having this background. I feel like there's a lot of stuff that I only understand on the most shallow level. And if I had a better grounding in math and science, I would have a deeper understanding of these subjects. So I'm glad I was able to at least pick up what I was able to. But at the time, didn't know anything. I was kind of stuck. So what I did was there was also several hundred boxes of correspondence where the scientists would write each other and their peers and other people describing their experiments. So they made an effort to, speak English. And so I concentrated on letters instead, but it was wonderful because the story emerged through these letters. And also it took me on all these fascinating side trips. They were very famous at the time, so whenever anything strange happened in the United States, people would write them. They were the only people to turn to, and they would just say, look, this weird thing happened. Tell me what's going on. So there was thousands and thousands and thousands of letters spanning decades of all these strange stories. So I would pick the more interesting ones to me and develop chapters out of them. So at the same time that I was telling the story of Duke and the experiments that they did, I was trying to give an overview of the strange things happening in America.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. And at the time, this was just after there was a humongous, revolution kind of thing with the spiritualist movement, back in the mid to late 1800s, and a lot of worldwide famous people had gotten, you know, into it, and well, Houdini was going around trying to debunk everybody, and the, I mean, there was this huge, like, movement, and then, and of course, J.B. Ryan at Duke then sort of took the reins and was really, really studying this from a scientific perspective, and, you know, we've got Zener cards because of him, you know, that kind of thing. So we've got, a real big piece of history actually looking into scientifically the phenomena that people have talked about literally for, well, since the beginning of recorded time.
Yeah, completely.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly how it got started, and that was their aim. I mean, it was started by J.B. Ryan and his wife, Louisa, who I'll call Louie. That was her nickname. And they were scientists, and they became interested in these phenomena, but as scientists, they wanted to see if they could apply the scientific method to the study and investigation of the paranormal. And what happened was just, it was just all this perfect timing. They went up to Boston, and one of the first things they did was they started studying mediums. That's what everybody else was doing at the time, and it was just the only place I could pretty much think of to start. And but unfortunately, it didn't go very well. The mediums that they saw didn't really produce very much. And then there's this one that they're the most famous for. They investigated a medium who named Marjorie in Boston. And she was very well known at the time, and a lot of people that they respected her. So they went, you know, to this sitting with, you know, a lot of expectations, but it was a miserable experience. She just, you know, it was just a very hokey performance, and Ryan could see her, like, kick things when it got out of her hands, when supposedly, you know, the spirit was the one, you know, moving things. And
well, that sounds like good research to me, if you're getting concluded. Okay, this person's a buffoon. Let's move on now.
Exactly. So they wrote up this very scathing report, and it was published in an academic journal, but it got picked up by newspapers all around the country, and they became, you know, famous overnight for debunking the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
So around the same time, this guy named John Thomas, he was a public school administrator from Michigan.
Yay.
His
poor
wife...
guy.
I know what his winters were like.
Sorry. I love winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you can have them.
Yeah, you can have them. Stacy will give it all to you.
I guess New York winters are tamer than
Michigan. Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that. We didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. Anyway, his wife died. Very sad. And
yes.
So he started visiting mediums in order to communicate with his wife. But he was, you know, he was not a buffoon. He was a very serious guy, too. So he was, like, keeping track of these mediums, and he made notes, and he went to Europe to sit with mediums to you know, further eliminate fraud as an explanation, because these mediums wouldn't know him and would have no way of researching him or his wife. You know, this was not the days of the internet where they could just Google information about her.
Yeah.
So he was getting a lot of what he thought was credible information. So he went to Harvard, and he wanted someone to do something with it, and they put him in touch with J.B. Ryan. And at the same time, he was corresponding with this very famous professor, William McDougall, who was just recently lured down to Duke University from Harvard. And he was into psychical research. So he wrote to McDougall and about this material he had, and then he wrote the Ryans, and he said, look, if McDougall says okay, would you be willing to go down to Duke University at my expense and analyze this material that I've gathered?
Okay.
And McDougall said yes, and Ryan said yes, and so they went down. And they found over and over and over again that the mediums were able to provide information that they thought realistically they had no way of knowing through normal means. So they established that the mediums, at least most of the mediums that he had visited, were not frauds. And so they got this information, you know, through some extrasensory means. But what they said was to John Thomas was, okay, they're getting information, but that doesn't mean that they're getting it from the dead, your wife. They could be getting it via telepathy. They could literally be reading your mind and getting this information.
Okay.
So John Thomas was not very happy about that.
He's like, no, I wanted to be my wife.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Exactly. This is not good news for him. And but the Rhines, you know, they tried to explain to him, look, you know, I know you're disappointed, but this is, you know, this is really a good place for us to start. We're looking for a place where, you know, where we can design experiments. We know that the body dies, so we have to find something about us that, you know, exists, you know, outside the body. Otherwise, you know, that's it. You know, when you die, the body dies, you're dead. If there's nothing about us that exists outside the body, there's no chance of life after death. But if we can establish that we have this ability, telepathy, that operates, you know, independent of the physical body, then that opens the door to the possibility of life after death. So this is a good thing. It's a good place to start. We'll start here, and then somehow we'll move on to your dead body.
Wow.
Which they never actually did. But they started with experiments with playing cards and using Duke University students. Well, actually, they first started with children, and then they moved on to Duke University students. Mm-hmm. And they just developed these experiments where they just tried to see if the students could tell them what symbols, you know, what cards they were holding, you know, without the students seeing them. Mm-hmm. And they found that the students could. But they also had, you know, biases towards certain playing cards. You know, they would guess, you know, they'd have a favorite suit or a favorite card. You know, they might guess the Ace of Spades a lot or the Jack of Hearts, whatever. They were just too familiar, and most people had associations with them.
Okay.
So they asked another professor, psychology professor Carl Lehner, to design their own cards. And that these are the ESP cards that a lot of people, I think, are, you know, seen at least once. They were used in Ghostbusters.
These are the wavy lines.
Exactly.
Triangle, the square, the circle.
Yeah, shapes and stuff like that, yeah.
So they used those, and they eliminated the bias that people had towards, you know, normal deck of cards, and once again they found that students could tell them what symbols were on those cards without seeing them. And they got a lot of criticism at the beginning, and they had to refine how they did the experiment, you know, further eliminating cheating or fraud, you know, separating the student and the person testing them by a screen, and then putting them in different rooms, finally different buildings, and then finally they were doing the test completely double-blind, so that even the experimenter didn't know which symbols were on the cards that the students were guessing. And they found, and this is, again, this is where statistics came in, they found that students could guess more of these cards than what would be expected by chance. But more importantly, I mean, people can come up with really, really good guesses and guess, like, for instance, in a deck of 25 cards, most people could guess 5 cards just by luck, sheer luck, you know, getting up to five lucky guesses. But if you guess more than that, statistically, that's evidence that something else is going on. The thing is, you know, people can do astoundingly well, I mean, sometimes. So the key thing was, like, so let's say a student guessed 10.
Okay.
The important thing was, can he do it again? I mean, because amazing things happen, they just don't happen a lot. So we would test the students repeatedly.
Yeah.
So they could repeatedly get more than 5.
And that's science. That's being that's applying the scientific theory, is being able to repeat these results over and over again.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That's cool.
And they could.
And they could.
Yes. They found students that could. And so they ultimately they thought this was an ability that we all have, you know, to one extent or another. This is not a special talent for the chosen few.
Oh, okay.
How interesting. So this must have really been a big success for them. I mean, they had been like,
okay. A hell of a finding for that time.
Because, I mean, first of all, they're trying to do what they thought they should do. They're running all over, you know, going up to Boston and stuff. And they're essentially meeting with, you know, disappointment. I mean, it's pretty much like you, Stacey, when you went down there and you're like, it's all math. I'm somewhat disappointed. You know, I wanted to write... I should have stuck with a ghost story. At least I could, you know, sink my teeth in. And then all of a sudden it sort of changed with the right boxes. You suddenly, wow, these are the correspondences, and they're talking about what they're doing. This is the meat, you know, this is the good stuff.
Yeah.
Same thing with them. They must have, like...
Oh, they were so excited.
Yeah.
They were so... You read these letters, and it was like they had... they had discovered another universe or, you know, another dimension. It was very exciting. And they published their results, but unfortunately, and this is where the title comes in, they were never accepted by the scientific community. I mean, a small number of people did, but for the most part, the bulk of the scientific, the response from the bulk of the scientific community was hostility. And I couldn't believe it. Like, I read letter after letter just dripping with venom. And here was another thing where I was so naive. I was so used to my entire life thinking of scientists as being rational. And to see this completely irrational behavior was just really eye-opening. And of course, I realized, well, yeah, they're human. You know, what did I think? That they never lose it? And they completely lost it with the Duke experiments. They for their entire lives, they were accused of fraud, wishful thinking, delusion, sloppy experiments. And I investigated to the best of my ability all these claims, and I found no basis in any of them. They were not credible at all. They were meticulous in their experiments, and any complaint about the controls, they would apply and respond, and they still got results.
And Stacy, that still goes on today too.
One of the things in the forefront of people's minds who are experimenting in this, most people, I should say, there are other people who are just, you know, whatever. But but one of the things is, am I deluding myself first? You know, that this was a valid experiment, that this was a valid result, that my, you know, that everything was correct. Am I deluding myself? Am I finding what I want to find, or am I finding what's actually happening and going on? And that's really, like, in the front of you know, serious researchers' minds right now. Doing it with EVP. It's like, was it
something that came out of nowhere that came on the recording, or was it what you want to hear?
Just putting it together in my head?
It's matrix.
And
things like
So a lot of people.
Well, with a properly designed experiment, delusion is not a factor, and experiments were properly designed.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take a quick break here, Stacy. When we come back, I want to kind of get into, you know, some other, you know, other, I mean, obviously we're talking about ESP and stuff like that, but I want to get into, like, poltergeist, some other stuff that these guys studied, obviously.
And EVP was something I looked into. That was so much fun.
And they covered, I mean, they pretty much covered the whole gamut of what we even talk about on this show. So it's fantastic. Let's take a quick break, though. We're talking to Stacy Horn, having a great time here. Stacy, you enjoying yourself, by the way?
I'm having a great time.
Good.
While we're on break, I want everybody to go to their web browsers and type in www.stacyhorn.com. That's StacyHorn.com for more information. And we'll be right back with more from Stacy after this.
Ghostly Talk!
Wondering where you can get the latest news and reviews from the world of paranormal entertainment? Frank and Laura take a look at the latest happenings and break down what's new on TV and at the movies each week on Spooktacular, your paranormal entertainment roundup. Check them out by searching for Spooktacular in iTunes or head on over to Spooktacular.com. Oh yeah, be sure to bring along a friend because no one should listen alone.
I'd like to share a recent experience where I strongly believe that I encountered a shadow person.
When I looked, it was January 5th, 2046.
I just, you know, I want to find an explanation for it. I want to rule it out as, you know, something that was logical.
There are many things we have yet to learn about and understand. Join us here at Supernatural Existence and learn about the many mysteries of the universe. Feel free to subscribe via any of your favorite podcast directories, including iTunes, or check us out on the Supernatural Existence website at www.globeye.com. The mysteries are waiting to be understood.
I really want to see something supernatural with my own eyes, not hear it or think I heard it or anything like that, actually see it with my own eyes, capture it on camera, hear something weird or something like that.
Thank you. tried to keep from stressing, but now my faith is turned to doubt. God, I'm asking you, take these troubles from my life. God, I'm asking you, don't forget about my life. God, I'm asking you, will you pull me through? You're the only one who can help me, so God, I'm asking you.
Folks from the Ghostly Talk. Ooh, this place is creepy, man, but nowhere near as creepy as Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's a haunted drive-in, babies. And you know what we do there? We host classic B-horror and sci-fi movies, just like the ones you grew up with when you was a kid. But it's at Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema right now, hosting on public access TV all over Metro Detroit. But guess what, kiddies? It's coming to you, and all you gotta do is have a computer. Just go to Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. It's nightmarecinema.com. We'll be broadcasting the show real soon, right from the website. Stay tuned. It's Wolfman Max Nightmare Cinema. Bye.
Nightmare Cinema.
The television screen is the retina of the mind's eye. Therefore, television is reality. And reality is less than television.
I love it. when I turn the volume down, actually, so you can hear me. Love it when we have a guest on the show who actually hops in our chat room, too.
Oh, I know.
I think that's so cool.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really cool. And Stacy's in there mixing it up. I'm keeping an eye on things. Stacy, you rule. That's so cool.
So as you now know, again, we're talking with Stacy Horn. The website is www.stacyhorn.com, StacyHorn.com. That's going to be in our permanent links and stuff. Did that come through the... Oh, good. The,
I just adjusted
his microphone, so all I...
No, what I did is I pulled the mic out of the channel, so you got none of you would hear it to make the show sound more professional. The problem with that, though, is that it distracts Doug.
I still hear it. I'm like,
so now we spent the last 10 minutes talking about it.
but it'll be in our permanent link at ghostlytalk.com.
Thank you.
And we're talking about the book called Unbelievable, Investigations into Ghosts, Poltergeists, Telepathy, and Other Unseen Phenomena from the Duke Parapsychology Laboratory. I'm telling you, this is history. This is the history of what we all are doing. This is where the scientific study began and flourished and was balked at sometimes and was eye-opening at other times. I mean, depending on, who's looking at it. So it was definitely a pivotal time because it happened just after the big spiritualist movement and just before now. And it was 50 years of important history. And Stacy went through, dug it all out, and learned all about it and put it into a book that you can just go get and read her findings and her stuff on it. Just Stacy, first of all, good job.
Yeah,
because that's something that has needed to be done.
That's thanks.
50 years of important history about what every one of us are doing.
And I also want to point out, it's still going on. It's not part of Duke anymore, but the Rhine Research Center, because you've had Sally on the show, still exists. Yep.
That's true.
And Sally rules. We can't say enough good things
about her. Oh, absolutely.
So cool.
And I was interested in, I know we were going to talk about all these other things, and we've been talking about ESP and the Zener cards and all that, and I dig it, because that's like the meat. That's like the really good stuff. But there is something that I wanted to ask you, and I'm glad I didn't in the first half hour, because we would have had to have gone to break and we would have missed some of it.
Uh-huh.
But I do want to know what when you were doing this, you had to run across so many varied things. You talk about the Zener card experiments, all the different experiments with all the ESP stuff. But what was your favorite? Because I know what my favorite would have been, but what was your favorite part of all this research that you did about all these wacky, wild things when you were expecting, at first, just to do a ghost story? What reached out and grabbed you?
I have a number of favorites, but I think the one that I'll talk about, I really got into writing about the story of the missing boy. They got this letter in the 60s from this father whose 6-year-old son had gone missing, and so they wrote the parapsychology lab asking them to recommend a psychic to help them find their son. And I think they did this because a lot of people had this misconception that this was like a team full of psychics down at Duke, which was nothing could be further than the truth. So I wrote about that. But I think what I'll talk about was the Poltergeist case, because I think that might be the most interesting to your listeners. anyway, they had done these tests for psychokinesis. That's the ability to move objects with your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they found, once again, that people could, but only a teeny tiny little bit. So they suspected that poltergeists were not spirits, but actually people with psychokinetic abilities, much stronger than what they had seen demonstrated in the lab. So they were always on the lookout for poltergeists. But usually by the time they heard about them, the events were over.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1958, they heard about this poltergeist out on Seaford, Long Island, here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still going on. So Gaither Pratt, one of the scientists, literally got on a plane that day, flew to Long Island, and was shaking the hand of the family that night. And the minute they opened the door, there was like a crash in the basement. They all went running to the basement, and there was a crash upstairs. So it was like, oh, my God, we're here. We're in the thick of it, finally. And he stayed for like a month and, you know, wrote like this 75, I forget how many pages, some ridiculous number of pages report. Ultimately, saying, you know, we studied, I think it was 67, you know, occurrences, and of these 67, 17 cannot be explained by ordinary means, so something was going on in this house. And it was just so much fun to research because of my last book, I had a lot of friends in the police department, so I got the Nassau County Police to search and find the original case files because they researched it too when the event started happening. The family, you know, called the police.
And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I mean, weird stuff's going on. Who's doing it? What's going on? I don't blame them for calling the police.
Right, but knowing the police, like when I learned that, I just cracked up because I could just imagine the looks on the cops' faces when they got the call, like, you know, hey, they want us to invite, you know, investigate a ghost. Like, sure, okay.
We'll be right down for that.
That's the top of our list. The most
but they have
wanted.
To respond. They have to respond. So they sent a guy who was out on patrol over, and he gets there, and things started happening when he was there. One of the main things that happened was the tops of bottles would pop off, and whatever was in, you know, the bottle would crash, and whatever was in would spill. Things would fall off
Not
shelves
if it was Diet
and tables.
Pepsi. If it was Diet Pepsi, I would have caught it. I'm an addict. Yeah. I would have been like, ooh, the pop on that one. Obvious, or the top on that one went off.
That'd be one. That would be one. Be one poltergeist that would be leaving very soon if they went after Doug's Diet Pepsi.
Oh, yeah. I'd be like, no.
Well,
I
1958. No Diet Pepsi.
Oh, okay. That's right. Oh. Well, I'm glad.
Lucky
I wasn't
for that ghost. Huh?
Yeah, that was
lucky for that poltergeist.
Very, very lucky.
So this poor cop, like, gathers all the bottles, puts them in the bathtub, and then calls his sergeant and goes, okay, now what do we do? And they assigned it to this detective, Joe Tozzi, and he spent months researching it. He called everyone he could think of, scientists, architects, you know, building contractors, Con Ed, everyone. And all this expertise, you know, went at this problem trying to find an explanation. You know, they studied landings and takeoffs at Mitchell Field, which was the closest airport, and they could find no explanation. And I tracked down everybody I could who had originally investigated this story. Unfortunately, the detective had since passed on, but I found his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her, you know, what did he think? And she said, you know, my dad was a cop. It, you know, he thought just what you thought you would think he would think. He thought the whole thing was, yeah, it's the kid. Because there were two kids in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone suspected them at first.
And
he thought it was the kid, too. But he told her that one day he had been investigating. He was there looking into it. And he had the kid by the hand. And they were about to go downstairs into the basement because something had just, you know, happened in the basement. And something hit the back of his legs. And he turned around, and it's like this little metal statue of a horse, and there was nobody around who could have thrown it. There's nobody behind him. And she said for the rest of his life, like, he didn't know where to put that. And so he had to conclude that this was not a hoax, but he couldn't explain it. It's essentially a cold case.
Yeah.
But everyone I found said the same thing. It was not a hoax. We don't know what caused it, but it's not a hoax. And I found one of the two kids, now grown, actually found both of them, but the boy wouldn't talk to me, but the girl, who's now a grown woman, did. And she was a science teacher, a retired science teacher at this point. So she said, you know, we didn't think it was poltergeist either, but, you know, we know it wasn't a hoax. We knew, you know, that things, you know, fell off shelves and pictures came off walls, mm-hmm. and nobody was there to knock it off. She's sure that someday there will be an explanation for it, but she knows it did, in fact, happen. And that's what I always say when people are hostile about, you know, what I say in the book. Like, I satisfied myself that the results from all their experiments were valid, that, you know, they cannot be written off to fraud or sloppy experiments. The results are valid. And I say, like, you don't. That doesn't mean you have to accept telepathy. All I'm saying is that here's a strange thing, an anomaly that cannot be explained, and it's real. So, you know, find out, you know, what's causing it. It's like a clue to something we don't understand about the universe.
Oh, there's been things, I mean, even with our private research we do, and people we know that they've run into things where, you know, and they try to control the environment the best they can, and they run into something that, you know, it was bizarre, and there was no way to more or less prove it was a real paranormal occurrence,
right,
or if it was something natural.
And
so then, we just call it an anomalous.
And
here,
a lot in our cases, that we rarely can control the entire situation.
Yeah,
because
we don't have
millions of dollars
to work with.
Yeah, we're not in a lab or in a controlled environment where we can control everything. So what happens is it just, you know, has to happen, and then we've got to try and, you know, record it and deal with it, you know.
Mm. But so you do EVP investigations?
We do try.
Yeah.
I mean,
we've been milking two EVPs that we got from 2004. Are you kidding me?
We don't get the kinds of results that other people do.
We did. We got two EVPs in 2004 that we've been, like I said, I'm kidding around, but we've been using those because, and if you want, Stacey, I'll send you some links to them if you want to check them out.
I'd love to.
Yeah, but
I love these things.
We've done a lot of EVP work over the years, and we've gotten other stuff that we thought, you know, we really can't explain it. And again, we concluded that those things, we use term them anomalous. We don't know whether they're natural or they're something truly, you know, truly a paranormal occurrence or whatever you want to call it.
But I do have to say, I love letting my mind go on them.
Yeah, totally.
Listening to it and then going, you know, what if it is in one case a little girl, what if it's a, I mean, who knows what it could have been. It could have been an overflying airplane. But I just love letting my mind wander all over it and thinking of the implications.
Right, it's something that has to be explained. It, you know, I don't understand the need to explain it away. Like, find another explanation. But it's interesting. It could be a clue to something very important.
Yeah.
It does seem to me that there is another source of information out there that has not been explained.
Speaking of which, you know, parapsychologists today, we've talked to several through, you know,
for some
reason Scott went on a booking spree and he booked a whole bunch of them all at once, and it really depressed me.
It was an interesting month.
It was a really good month.
It was a real interesting month.
But I got the distinct feeling that parapsychologists of today,
mm-hmm.
They don't believe in ghosts in the way that I think of ghosts. They seem to be like ghosts are internal manifestations of ourselves, I blew that one. I'm gonna get like letters.
I know what you meant.
Start over.
External manifestations of ourselves, and that everything can be explained by, you know, ESP and telepathy and psychokinesis and that kind of thing. That it does not have to be a wandering spirit or soul that is of somebody who's passed away, that it could be somebody living manifesting all these different things, the EVPs, the photos, the videos, the physical manifestations,
mm-hmm.
all of this stuff could be, and then in the case of mediums, you know, just mind reading, telepathy, all of this stuff could be explained away if we just ascribe to humans these abilities that the Rhines were showing, you know, scientifically or statistically, that we do have, right? And and so that really disappointed me, because I prefer to think of a ghost as like in the classic, you know, ghost story sense. You know, it's like, oh, you know, the fellow's wife passed away and she tries to contact him from the other side, you know, or that kind of thing. I just think of it as a, you know, I'd like to think of a ghost as the spirit of or soul of a person, just you couldn't touch them anymore and communicate with them as freely
when they're
in reality.
They're intelligent. They retain they could retain their personality traits.
Which I think is the classic definition of a ghost. So
yeah.
But what about the Rhines? Did they ever?
I was like furiously searching for this figure because at a certain point their experiments came to a standstill. They were able to establish over and over again this effect that they chose to call telepathy,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't able to learn much about it, like how it operated, and therefore they couldn't enhance it or control it. So it was very frustrating to them. And so one thing that they did do was they spent a number of years doing a survey of all these letters that I described that they had, because they thought, you know, here's like this enormous research describing the things that happen out there, you know, people's ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
Let's study them and see, you know, what kind of pattern emerges, and so we can learn something about these experiences that might suggest experiments that we can do in the lab. And they were pretty much what you just described. They thought that ghosts, for the most part, could be explained by telepathy, ESP, and psychokinesis. But when Loisa Rhine finished this survey, and she spent, I think, like 8 years on it, of these ghost stories, she concluded that 3% of the letters in the collection showed possible evidence of what she called incorporeal personal agency. But that was basically her word for ghosts. So she said 3% could not be explained by ESP, telepathy, so she thought it was possible that it was evidence for ghosts.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so that sounds very, very scientific too.
But
I don't blame her. I don't blame her from her point of view. But they didn't, of course, they only had, 50 years seems like a long time, but believe me, I know when I have, you know, things to do.
Well, you've lived like 3 or 4 of those, haven't you, Doug?
Something like that. But no,
you're older than the ocean, Doug.
A little bit. But they have, but I sound young.
It isn't a show unless I...
but I sound young. Yeah. I have the same feeling. I sound young.
but they have, they didn't... what I really like about that is that they didn't dismiss ghosts or the ghosts as I classify them.
Yeah, they didn't say...
But they didn't have... It just seems like they didn't have enough time to really, really dig in,
mm-hmm,
like they did with the telepathy and with what they had started with. And
they
remember...
I'm sorry. They had a different agenda. Like, they were trying to get accepted by the scientific community, so they had to, like, shy away from ghosts.
Right, and plus they were immediately upon the heels of the spiritualism movement, which was of course very, very physical manifestations of phenomena. So
mm-hmm,
what happens is they of course were able to concentrate on more physical manifestations and things that you could like Psychokinesis,
yeah.
Which, by the way, went through name changes. It was telekinesis and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it ended up being psychokinesis. But they could concentrate on that because that was very real, very in the minds of people. Of course it was real. They proved it. But, it was in the minds of everybody at the
mm-hmm
time.
Mm.
Whereas right now, I think if you went up to... somebody who's 15 or 16 or 17 and said, you know, what does a medium do, right? They
mm-hmm
wouldn't say, oh, he or she sits in a spirit cabinet and produces, you know, ectoplasm and then, you know,
right,
ghosts of, you know, heads of ghosts float around the room in the dark. You know, they would say, no, what it is like a guy stands on stage and he points at somebody and says, do you have a deceased loved one named Lucy? That's what they would say. There is no physical manifestations anymore.
It's all fortune telling, essentially.
It's all
fortune telling. I mean, and for better or for worse, that's really what it's become.
But at the time of the Duke, you know, lab,
mm-hmm,
it was the very physical mediumship.
Yeah.
What about?
And they were trying to move away from that.
Yes, thank heavens. But although I would like to see an old fashioned. If I had a time machine.
It would really be cool to see something.
I would go to Boston and I would be watching that. I would be watching Dee Dee Holm out in Europe. I'd be, I would go to town. What about there was another one? We only have 2 minutes. Darn it!
Oh well.
This is totally.
Sorry, you're gone.
Thanks.
No. That's, what were you going to ask?
Well, I was going to say there's another institute or another thing that just has got to have a history that just would be literally vaults and vaults full of you know, experiments and things like that. And that would be the ASPR, American Society for Psychological or Psychical research.
Psychical research, you're right. They may, yeah, they could, I mean.
They don't want anyone in their vaults. I tried desperately to get access to their materials, but even for researchers, they were not very open.
Well, that's definitely a bummer, and I'm very, very glad that the Rhine Institute was, or the Rhine Institute is what's going on now, that the Rhine Research lab was allowed you into the, or well, it was Duke University.
And so Duke University. Duke University welcomed me with open arms, even though they have very mixed feelings about the work. But they want people to have access to it to study it.
It is a piece of history, regardless of what what someone's personal bias may be. It's a body of work that was put together. Put together by a group of people.
A sincere group of people.
Yeah, yeah. Regardless of whatever it is, sincerity.
For half a century of investigation.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's all there, and it's all, and you went through them, and you put it into a book, and I think everybody probably owes it to themselves to go and get unbelievable investigations into ghosts, poltergeist, telepathy, and other unseen phenomena from the Duke Parapsychology Laboratory. I mean, that is... That's the kind of stuff that began what we're doing.
And I have to make one comment. We have to go to break here in a second.
I know.
We have guests on here sometimes, Stacey, that literally tell Doug and I on the air. They say, I really like your guys' energy. You guys are fun and upbeat. And I have to throw that at you this time, I think. I don't know why. I'm not trying to embarrass you or anybody, Stacey, but I really like your energy. I really had a good time talking to you. I really, really enjoyed
it. Thank you. Me too. It was a lot of fun.
Sincerely have to say that. And I really would. I think we would really like to have you back on again sometime if you'd like to drop by the show.
Oh, I'd love to.
For sure. Cool.
It's a lot of fun. I'd love to. And there's so many more stories to tell.
I think we didn't even scratch.
I know. I was like, I ended up having to go through and pick what I wanted to hear about out of the list of things. But you guys, the website is www.stacyhorn, that's StacyHorn.com, permanently linked up at ghostlytalk.com in the past guest page, and hopefully future guest page. Because just amazing stuff, Stacy. Congratulations and thank you.
Stay on the line for one second. Don't leave us just yet, okay?
Okay.
We're going to go to break here. Who do we have coming up next?
Coming up next, return guests. Probably in the running for you
between
know,
her and Vance.
Between
yeah,
her and Vance, it's like the most appearances on Ghostly Talk. Heidi Hollis is coming up. We're going to talk about picture prayers.
It's her new book.
Okay.
Heidi Hollis's new book.
She doesn't stop.
I know she does.
She just keeps going and going.
She's
love
her
it.
Mind. We're gonna be we love Heidi. Heidi is our girl.
Yes. Coming up next, Heidi Hollis.